says drawing can't be a career? Hello, my name is Drew. Welcome to Fascinating People, the show where we grab somebody from West Nipissing and we talk to them for about a half an hour about their life, their dreams, and what makes them fascinating. The policy of this show is that everybody is fascinating. You just have to get them to tell you why. Martin is our guest for this week, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name. I'm going to leave that up to him. It's a lot of letters, but he grew up here, went to college in Sudbury, wanted to become an illustrator, and is currently working with big movie studios like Disney and Fox to create shows, television, movies, and on his own time, creates video games, comic books, children's books. He's so versatile, and we're so glad to have an artist here to tell us about his story. Before we get into it, just wanted to remind you, if you yourself are fascinating or you know somebody who is, tell us about him. Drew@moosefm.com. Send me an email. We'll see if we can work things out. From Ottawa, in his basement, in his pajamas, here is Martin on Fascinating People.
Hi, my name is Martin Deschatelet, originally from Sturgeon Falls, and I am now a professional illustrator.
Professional illustrator?
Yeah. I get paid to draw. Awesome.
And hopefully you like drawing.
Forced labor, yeah. when you turn your hobby into a career, never feels like work, so...
That's the goal, and we'll get to your job in a second, but I think we'll start with the first part of your introduction. Sturgeon Falls native, so you grew up here.
I did, yes.
How long ago was this?
So I was born in 84, so I've spent my whole life in Sturgeon up until I graduated high school, so that was back in 2002.
And where'd you go from there?
And studied at Collège Boréal in Sudbury for 3 years in classical animation. So hand-drawn stuff, and then came back to Sturgeon afterwards in 2006, and I was the production manager over at the Tribune for a little under 2 years, and then went back to school in Toronto to Oakville for computer animation.
So you went all around. You did the hand-drawn and the 3D rendering.
And the computer, exactly, yeah. Opened a bit more doors.
Yeah, you got to move with technology is what I hear.
Exactly.
So then I guess...
It moves fast.
Yeah, oh yes. The time flies when you least expect it.
Yep.
So then let's travel back to, I think it would be 2005 when you were just learning, or you're taking 3 years to learn about hand-drawn animation. You said this was in Sudbury.
Yeah. Can anybody add? I don't think the program exists anymore. Unfortunately, but it was 3 years, and we did a lot of illustration, hand-drawn animation, and then the third year was actually an intro to 3D animation, so that's what got me interested in pursuing the 3D part later on, but a lot of life drawing and comic book drawing and stuff like that. Moved back with my parents after I graduated and kept working on my portfolio as I was working for the Tribune. And, decided to go back to school just to, open the doors a little more and meet more people in the industry and stuff like that in Toronto. Turned out it was a good move. I went to Sheridan for the computer animation, and I wanted to go to Sheridan after high school, but it's one of the top art schools in Canada, so there was no way I was getting in. I think they only accept like 80 people like a year.
Wow.
So... So I felt pretty lucky to get in the second time around. It was a post-grad course as well, so you needed a diploma in order to take the course. I jumped on that bandwagon, and I just consider myself lucky to be able to get in, and it was a great opportunity to really advance my career. So, yeah.
So you started this back in 2002. It's now 2020. You pretty much wanted to draw for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And that's, I knew that would be my career since I was, 4 years old. So it's what I've always done, and it's what I love doing. And I was the kid in class that was just scribbling all over the desk, getting in trouble because all my tests had, characters on them. And bunch of doodles. So.
And at what point did you say, like, you're going to pursue this? Like, I can't imagine being an illustrator is an easy job field to get into. You'd really have to work at it. So was there a moment where you maybe said, okay, I got to put 2 feet into the water. I've got to go full hard on this.
I guess in high school, I was also really interested in like paleontology and that kind of stuff, you know, dig up dinosaurs. But then through high school, I realized, wow, science is not my strong point. Let's never mind university. Let's, you know, focus more on what I can do and what I'm, you know, hopefully good at. And, you know, it turns out there was a course, you know, right in Sudbury. So that was perfect back then. It wasn't too far from home. And, yeah, so as I'm taking the course as well, you know, I realized, like, wow, this is really cool. You know, it opens a lot of doors for the industry. You know, like being an illustrator is not, doesn't just mean, you know, you're coloring kids' books.
You know. It's not paint by numbers.
No, no. And a lot of, you know, a lot of the entertainment industry and all that kind of stuff, whether it's publishing or TV or games or, you know, there's, they all involve illustrators. So I thought, you know, that'd be cool to work on these awesome projects and, you know, get your art seen by a lot of people and just to work on exciting stuff. And from there, I just keep going. You practice every day. You build a portfolio. You try to keep up with the technology because, you know, illustrators now, it doesn't just mean you're drawing crayons on paper. It barely involves paper anymore. It's all digital now. I have what's called a Cintiq. It's basically a giant tablet with the screen, you know, like an iPad, but it's like 23 inches and everything is painted on there.
So let's go back to your timetable then. So in, you were doing computer science. So you did the Tribune and you were working on your portfolio. Did you have to send that portfolio to Toronto to get into the computer animation course there? So then that would be where the practice comes in and where it really helps you out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So with the bit of 3D I learned with my first college, I kept working on it, kept putting in on some skills and to build that up to in order to send over, you know, to hopefully get accepted. And it worked.
So how long did you spend learning about computer animation?
A couple of years. Yeah, maybe a total of like 2 or 3 years. Whether in school or on my own, especially now with all the books out there and YouTube videos, kind of easy to self-teach some kind of stuff.
So you take the next 3 years, you start really honing your craft, making sure that you've got the talents and the resources to go on, and now you have to start. So you're out of school, you're still teaching yourself, but now you need to find work. What did you do first?
So right out of Sheridan, we had a like an industry day. So during the course, you build a 2-minute animation in 3D. And then at the end of the year, all these like industry, you know, experts and pioneers and bosses from like Disney and Pixar and all these people come to the school to check out what you've done. And then some, if you're really lucky, you get recruited right then and there. That didn't happen for me, but I applied for the headquarters for IMAX Canada is in Mississauga for, you know, anything. Got an interview and got back to me with a job offer to do some 3D modeling and animation for some Warner Brothers films, which at the time was one of the Harry Potter films. So right off the bat, the first job I got, I was like, bang, here you go. I was like, holy crap.
This is going to be seen by billions. Oh, all
yeah,
right.
I'm like, okay, can I even do that? That's when all the self-doubt starts.
Oh, pressure. Oh, I don't like this. Oh, no.
Oh, man. It was super excited, but super scared at the same time. Turned out well.
I was going to say, you're thrown into basically the big leagues. You get your big drop. Which Harry Potter film was it? Just so we have a timeline.
That was I want to say the sixth one, The Half-Blood Prince.
Okay.
So this was 2010, maybe? 2009, 2010?
I think Half-Blood Prince was 2009, yeah.
2009, okay. So, yeah, so I got the contract for that to work at the IMAX in Toronto. So what we did was we were doing the 3D conversion of the film. Where you go to theaters. Do theaters still do that with 3D glasses? I don't know. So we would, what we would do is remodel actors and characters and props and environments and all that, remodel all that in 3D and layer it out to have stuff pop out of the screen. And we had a mini theater at the studio as well where we could test out our scenes and make sure everything worked. So it was pretty neat. Got to see the movie before everyone else. So
they paid you on top of it. There, look at that.
They certainly did. Yeah. So it was really cool. And you learn a lot on the job as well. Seems like the work is less stressful than schoolwork for some reason. It's nerve-wracking, but it's not as, I don't know. It was still kind of a laid-back feel to it. And everyone you work with, you know, all these professionals and stuff, they're all like-minded people. So you get to work and learn a lot from really experienced artists and that kind of stuff. So it was really fun. It was really cool. And that led me to work on the next Harry Potter after that, as well as other IMAX movies, like, what was it, the Hubble 3D. I think that was 2010 or 2011, but we did a couple of IMAX movies as well.
So then, so let's go for Half-Blood Prince, because that movie runs 2.5 hours long. How long would it take to make that film into IMAX 3D?
Oh, God. The contract, for my part, it was 4 months, and we were a team of about, I want to say, like 15 3D artists, and I might have done in 4 months, like, oh geez, maybe one or two shots a day. And a shot could be anything between, you know, half a second to, you know, a minute. So yeah, it's really slow going. So who knows, I might have done like maybe,
but it sounds like about 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's about right, something like that. Yeah, give or take. Yeah.
Holy jump. So you had the film like real early because, you know, it had to be get ready for release, I assume.
Yep. We were done a few months before release, but it was a lot of scenes we would get shot and the scenes aren't finished yet. It's just like actors in front of green screens. So that was interesting to watch. That was really cool, especially when sometimes the effects aren't added yet or the CG stuff isn't there yet. And you really see how a movie is built, and all the departments every shot has to go through until it gets a final product is quite amazing.
And like you said, that's great experience for you, great knowledge that you kept with you. You say your contract was there for 4 months. You got 4 months of that experience. So what did you do after the 3D modeling?
So then I went into TV commercials doing storyboarding. So I went back to illustration. I guess it's always my fallback. If you can't find work in 3D, then it's good to have something else, right? Mm-hmm. So I went back to drawing, and that was storyboards for TV commercials. Basically, I would do like mini comics of what the TV commercial would look like. So I would, you know, draw the actor and draw the set and props and stuff like that to give clients an idea of what the commercial is going to be before we actually shoot it.
So you worked closely with the director to kind of find what the tone would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, and writers and stuff. So I'd get a script of what the action is, what's going on. And it was always like product placement and all that kind of stuff. So we did stuff for like Coca-Cola or like Colgate or geez, anything, almost anything you can think of. I was there for, I started as a freelance and then they hired me full time. So I was there for a total of 2.5 years, maybe, and I must have done about 300 commercials. Yeah.
And it was just the storyboards. That was your job here?
That was it.
For 2.5 years?
Yeah. And then we started, because I had the background in 3D as well, I would do not only storyboards, but some of the 3D animations within the commercials. Like, you see sometimes these, like, pill commercial where there's, like, a glass body, and you see, like, liquid going down the stomach, you know, stuff like Gaviscon and all that kind of stuff, heartburn stuff. So I would do some 3D animations of that.
Right. You got the talent. You might as well use it.
Might as well, right? Yeah.
So then, because I've got your quote-unquote resume that you sent me, but I noticed that you do comics and things of that nature. So I'm guessing the storyboarding kind of helped you in this aspect of your current career.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So me and a buddy of mine who's from Sudbury, we started a little publishing house here in Ottawa where we do comics and kids' books. So it's all like self-published stuff. But we've done about maybe 8-9 books so far, a couple of them being children's books and the rest are comics. So we have our most popular one is the Big Nick comic book series. So he's a Canadian superhero based out of Sudbury. It started off as a joke because Sudbury has their Graphicon every year. And we started with just a poster of the character just for fun, you know, oh, let's do a Sudbury superhero and give him a backstory and, you know, sell a poster or whatever. But then everyone started asking for a comic about it. And we're like, oh, that's a good idea, but we don't have time to do that. But we found the time, and the next year we were special guests at the con again. So we were like, all right, here is issue number one. So it was like a, you know, a 20-page little action comedy comic with the, you know, character's backstory and stuff like that. And now we're at issue 3, and we've got issue 4 in the works. So, yeah. And it's selling, like, not just in Sudbury, but it's sold across Canada. People really kind of jumped on it. There's a big hole in Canadian comics and superheroes. There aren't much. So, you know, people who are into that stuff really jumped on it, which we didn't expect either. But, hey.
You take all the compliments that come your way.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah. For those that are just hearing this, I'd like to point out that Big Nick, by the looks of it, is this gargantuanly muscled individual with a shield, and the shield is a giant nickel.
Yeah. So Big Nick, he's a mine rescue worker who disappeared in the mines like 30 years ago. And then in issue 1, you see that he's back above ground and he hasn't aged a day, but he's got all these superpowers now. So something happened beneath the earth. And Big Nick, he can grow to, like, you know, 100 feet tall. And he actually picks up the big nickel in Sudbury to use as a shield when he's fighting these giant monsters. You know, and he always puts it back when he's done. Sometimes it's like really damaged or melted or whatever, but he always puts it back.
The most interesting bank loan in the world.
Yeah. So, no, we have fun with it. It's certainly nothing serious.
That's awesome. Fun. And you guys call yourselves Expired Comics.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
We actually started that while I was working at the Tribune.
Well, yeah. It's that old.
Yeah. And only in the last 8 years, we've started actually, you know, producing. But yeah, we've been trying for a while before we actually got to it. But the name Expired is because I just figured, you know, the whole idea would expire before we actually ever publish anything. There you go.
When you come at it with a passion, it works. So you got to be careful about your naming systems.
Exactly. You can't go back after a while.
But at least it makes for a great story, right?
Yeah. And now, you know, with the following we got out of that, we decided, you know what? Let's take a break from comics and make something which, you know, might be a little more lucrative. And we're like, let's build a video game. So we partnered up with some people here in Ottawa. So now we have Expired Games, not just Expired Comics. So, you know, it's growing. We've got something going on with this video game. We have one of the big 3 publishers on board as well. Can't say who just yet, but it'll be a console game and computer game. And we've been working on that for the past 2 years, and it's extremely slow going. So much work goes into a video game, but we're getting there. We had a playable demo last year at the Sudbury Graphicon, got a lot of awesome feedback, and people really loved it. Now we've got about 99% of a full working, you know, functioning demo, the first level of the game, all polished and all that. So we'll be sending that out to other big publishers to see what they think, and we'll go from there. But yeah, we already have a publisher on board, so.
Well, it's fantastic
news.
Pretty
exciting. Yeah, and that's something we work on, you know, every Sunday, every week from, you know, 10 to 6. We all work together, you know, online, and we have an animator out in Nova Scotia. We have myself, who's in Orleans, my business partner's in Orleans as well. We've got some web developers in Ottawa, and, you know, we're all doing our work remotely, but, you know, always on chat and on camera, and yeah, and we were doing that work remotely before we were forced into quarantine, so no, hey. Nothing's changed.
So then we kind of jumped a little bit. So when you were working at for the storyboard commercials, how are you making money now? Are you making it from your comics and from, well, you can't make it from the game yet because I guess it's not released.
No, not from the game. It's all, you know, on our own free time and on our own money right now. But the comic, yeah, you don't really make money off of a comic. You know, you sell a comic for $5 or $10 and it costs, you know, $3,000 to print 500 issues. It takes a while to make anything off of a comic, really, which is kind of what gave us the just to work on the game instead. Kids' books are more lucrative. We released Seth the Sasquatch a few years ago. And that was all paid for by Kickstarter. You know, that's more business savvy, I guess. so we didn't have to pay a thing. And, you know, we got it all printed in China, you know, delivered here by boat and big crates of books. And then that's been selling all over as well. It's tapered off now. But we had a bunch of stores in Ontario that were carrying it and the libraries. And, you know, even the libraries in Ottawa had copies. And school boards bought a whole bunch for kids, and it's another series I want to keep going. But again, I don't have any time.
maybe. in case everybody missed it, it's Seth the Sasquatch. A little bit of a tongue twister there.
Yeah. It's not easy to say. It doesn't roll off really well, but
and speaking
it's
of
fun little kids' book.
Speaking of titles, we never actually mentioned what the game is. You guys are doing something called Nova Knights.
Yeah, Nova Knights. If anyone wants to check it out, there's a preview on YouTube, or we also have a little preview site called NovaKnightsGame.com, and that's Knights with a K, not Knight Knight.
They got armor, yeah, they got swords, they got shields, that kind of knight.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, I guess, very action-heavy, a lot of comedy, beat-em-up game. Takes a lot of influences from Castle Crashers, if anyone's ever played that. And that was a super fun game that was never really followed up. And we feel like every other game that tried to follow it up kind of failed. So we're taking everything from Castle Crashers and building on it. And it's kind of a love letter to it. But we're adding, you know, more strategy to it and more comedy and more depth to it. Fun, really fun project. You know, we're even doing like cutscenes for it. And we've got an amazing sound producer out in Sudbury. We have a full soundtrack of this epic music. It's amazing. The whole production is coming together. And so if people want to check out the preview online, there's some gameplay footage on there and stuff. So give you a sense of what the game is about.
Absolutely. So that's NovaKnightsGame.com if you want to see what our friend Martin is doing. And I want to ask about game design, because when you're, at least when I was playing games growing up, I always thought, man, I could make one of these, not actually knowing any sense of how a game is actually developed. What are some things that surprised you when you started to create a game?
How extremely difficult and slow going it is.
How do you mean?
And there's no way to do it alone. There's no way. Because you need artists, you need programmers, most of all. And you need game designers, because, you know, if you want a good game, it's got to look good, it's got to work good, and it's got to have a good flow and story through it or stuff like that, right? If you don't have a developer, then you just have a pretty pictures, but nothing's happening. If you don't have an artist, you have, well, nothing. Just code, if you like looking at lines of code. I'm not a developer whatsoever. I'm not good with technology, but just to have, it's sometimes it's hard and frustrating to have stuff flow together, like for the art to work with the programming or vice versa. There's a lot of back and forth. Oh, you can't do it that way. Got to do it this way. Can't look like that. That'll come in conflict with that. So a bunch of stuff like that where you always have to go back and fix. And every time something works and you get something to work, like, oh, when I press X, the guy swings his sword. But now when I press, you know, when I want to make him jump, he doesn't jump anymore. So why? Why is that happening? So, you know, there's a lot of bug fixes and stuff like that. It's really slow going. Of course, we're only working on it one day a week. If it was a full production, then it would go a lot faster. But even then, I've worked on, like, mobile games and stuff. And it's a good 6 months to do, like, a mobile game with a team of 50 people.
That's just a mobile game, too. Those are, like, the simpler form of video games.
Yeah. There's no storytelling involved in there, so it's just match three games or puzzles and stuff like that. So card games even. It's a lot of work.
So be prepared to have months on end dedicate to your idea.
Oh, for sure. And, reach out to people to help you. Because if you can draw and code, oh my God, you're absolute genius. But I've yet to come across any, so.
There's Martin's advice for you.
It's two different sides of the brain, right? You got the right side for the art, left side for the art, and right side for the coding. So I only have half a brain, apparently.
So then you've created a great success from basically a hobby. And I'm wondering, from your point of view, is there anything you'd like to say to somebody who's got something they consider, quote, dumb, that they don't think they can make a career out of? What would you say to them to, like, maybe at least give it a shot?
I mean, especially now with these quarantines and all that stuff and kids are stuck at home. Oh, man, this is the perfect time to, you know, practice your skills, watch YouTube videos, watch, you know, you can watch some pros drawing online and, you know, try to replicate what you see. If you see anything, you read a comic book, you're like, oh, I really like that character. Well, hey, this is the time, you know, practice. You always got to practice all the time. Even I still practice. A third of the time I'll draw something and I'm like, oh, this is complete crap. There's no way no one will accept this. So, you know, you start over. No one's perfect. Everyone, you know, they say, oh, good artists don't use erasers. That's complete bull. everyone uses erasers. Especially now, it's Control-Alt-Delete, right? You just go back. if you want, you know, all art now is created using Photoshop, mostly, especially for cartoons. Like right now, I'm doing cartoons for Disney or Fox and all that. It's all, you know, it's all Photoshopped illustration wise, and then it goes to other programs for animation. But if you can get your hands on Photoshop and start drawing in there, you're ahead of the curve. Even a fun project for kids now is, I know they have this thing going on in Orleans where every 2 days there's a theme and kids draw stuff to put up in windows, so you can drive around with your kids and try to spot all the houses that have these cool drawings in the windows. So it's a way to keep kids busy as well during these tough times. So I think last week it was like smiley faces, and this week it's superheroes. So I might actually join in on that. But, you know, it's cool little art projects for kids to do. It would be awesome to see that in West Nipissing as well. Got no school, can't really go outside either. No one really knows what's going on, but all you need is time to practice to be an illustrator, and just go from there and don't give up. And whenever you see something where you're like, oh man, I'll never be as good as that guy, well, how about you try to replicate what that guy's done and build on that until you get to that level. Being an illustrator is not just talent. Talent's like 50% of it. The other percentage is like technicality and tools that you use. I've gone to school with people who weren't very good at drawing, but you know, by the time they graduated, they could be professional artists. Almost anyone can do it.
You just need to have the determination and the practice, and one day you'll be like Martin, who like halfway through this just casually mentioned that he works for Disney and Fox.
In my pajamas, nonetheless. It's super weird because I was working at the studio in Ottawa. And now I have to work from home, but it's like you work on these big projects, and you're just like, is this legal?
Because, of course, when you think of these multi-billion-dollar movies or TV shows, you think like, okay, they've got a building with like people in suits and these technicians who are working around the clock with these billion-dollar equipment around it, whereas, no, I'm just in my basement in my pajamas.
Yeah, I'm just doing my part, drawing away. I mean, even the studios are pretty laid back. There's no one in suits. we're all artists. We can't. We don't wear suits. It's really cool. You know, it's just at home doing the stuff. It's fun. Even if I weren't working on it, I would still be doing something art related. Probably making more comics and kids books. Or working on the video game. Keep at it.
Absolutely. Well, we're running out of time, so I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy pajama schedule to chat with us a bit, Martin.
I'm going to go have another coffee.
Fair enough, buddy.
Oh, man. So, yeah, you know, hopefully this can, you know, encourage kids and, you know, parents as well. I often hear parents say, like, oh, I didn't know, you know, doodling and drawing could lead to a career, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, you know what? Like, yeah, that's how all art and entertainment starts, as, you know, illustrations. And it's a lot of pre-production stuff is illustrations. Even for live-action movies, they'll have illustrations of shots and stuff beforehand, right? So I've heard a lot of parents. I was teaching at the Ottawa School of Art as well a few years ago, and a lot of parents were like, "Oh, I didn't know. I had no idea. I thought you had to go to the university and take fine arts." Like, you know what? No one in fine arts actually works in art. Like, unless you're going to, like, curate a museum or, like, I don't know, write articles, that, you know, stuff like that. It's not, like, I don't want to insult anyone, but I don't, if you want to work on comics or shows or, you know, TV or video games, like, go to college. Get hands-on experience. Go from there.
Wonderful, man. Yeah, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us for a bit.
Oh, it's my pleasure.